I just want you to know how very thankful I am. And very grateful. And I forgot to bring my Kleenex. Before we start, somebody left some keys out on the registration table. Anybody claim them? Seriously, thankful is probably not the right word, but I'm just very excited and enthused once again to have you all here for the weekend, and we've got some great things planned, and I'm just, it's just, you know, as the weeks leading up to the conference are kind of stressful, to put it mildly, but when I get here and I start sharing in the energy that you're all putting out to each other and to me, it just rejuvenates me, and it just, you know, every minute that is spent on putting this together is multiplied positively by your energy. I'm really, really happy to meet those who have been here before, and we have a lot of new ones this year. I just wanted to let you know that we've got the most registered for the conference this year that we've ever had, which is, you know, when I left to fly down, we had 220 people registered, which was about 30 more than we'd had, 25 or 30 more than we had last year when I got down here. And we always have, you know, 50 or 60 people who show up during the weekend. So that's great. Just a couple of procedure things before I turn the time over to Chad, the president of the foundation. During the schedule tomorrow, it really is important to be on time. We crowd an awful lot into one day, and if we start getting behind in the schedule, it puts a lot of stress on the hotel staff because they can't get in here at the end of the afternoon to get the dinner set up. So be good little boys and girls, and try to show up right on time so we can start right on time. Also, I'd like to mention the raffle that we're having this year, which we will do this year. Over on the table against the wall, you'll see several of the items that will be raffled, and the raffle tickets are $1 each. They're not for any specific item. So when you purchase your raffle tickets, you'll kind of be taking potluck, but you're all free to, you know, trade items when we're done. And I'd like the two who are selling the raffle tickets to stand up, Nathan and John. And they'll be circulating all weekend selling tickets. There's some really good items over there. We've got John Krakauer's book. We've got one of Michael Quinn's books. We've got Grant Palmer's book. Several really interesting books over there. And one CD collection of the group Journey, which I thought was very appropriate for what we're in the middle of. And I just wanted to point out that this year I put the Sunday morning session a little later than we usually do because by Sunday morning it's just very difficult for all of you to get up. And it also gives a little more time for those who live locally who want to come back for the Sunday morning to get here. And so the Sunday morning session will be at 10 rather than at 9. And we are going to have a little mystery guest this evening after Chad speaks. And I know he's here, but I haven't been able to locate him. So don't raise your hand now if you're in here. We'll introduce you a little bit later. And I would like to turn a couple of minutes over to Richard Packham. He has a couple of announcements to make.
Thank you. First of all, I bring greetings from a young ex-Mormon missionary in Africa in Monrovia, Liberia, with whom I've been corresponding for about a year and a half. When he first wrote to me, he had just left his mission and wanted to know which church he should join. It turns out that he decided to join none and instead has organized the African Ex-Mormon Foundation in Liberia. they made the newspaper because the building that they rented for their meetings was owned by a couple that they were paying the rent to the husband. It turns out that the wife really owned the building, and she was a Mormon, and they were going around calling her religion a cult, and so she threw them out. And the item made the local newspapers. He's now being invited to speak to Christian groups, especially all around Liberia, and telling them about Mormonism. He would have been here today, except that he had an appointment tomorrow to speak to a group in Monrovia. But I bring you greetings from Darlington McGee. Another announcement, and that is that for those who might be interested, and this is not on the program, there will be an introduction or review, as the case may be, of the Mormon Endowment Ceremony right after this meeting. At around 10 o'clock in room 924. This may be of interest to those who never were endowed or those who were endowed only after 1990 when the major changes to the endowment were made, since this presentation will be based on the pre-1990 version. All those who might like to re-experience parts of the endowment in a different environment from the temple as part of their recovery from Mormonism are welcome. The entire ritual won't be presented, of course, since that would take over an hour, and we don't have the facilities for washings and anointings. But but the covenants, the signs, tokens, and the pre-1990 penalties will be demonstrated, and those who wish to will have the chance to pass through the veil into the celestial room wearing the robes of the holy priesthood.
That's my bedroom. Sorry, Richard.
No. That's all right. You should have seen the faces around when it was overheard when I was asking her for the key to her room. Anyway, let me make it clear that the purpose of this demonstration is not to mock or to spoof, but to educate and to make known the secret combinations of Mormonism and to fulfill the prophecy of the last days in the Book of Mormon, 2 Nephi 30:17-18, which says, "There is nothing which is secret, save it shall be revealed." There is no work of darkness, save it shall be made manifest in the light. And there is nothing which is sealed upon the earth, save shall be loosed. Wherefore all things which have been revealed unto the children of men shall at that day be revealed. Now, we are living in the latter days, according to the church, so we intend to reveal. Now, if the disclosure of these sacred, not secret, temple ritual secrets will make you feel uncomfortable, then since it violates the covenants of secrecy made in the temple, then please do not attend. Now, those who have temple clothing may bring it and wear it, and recommends are not required. Also, you want me to do this? Yeah. Also, I've advanced so far in this organization that I am now the official timekeeper. And so during the open mic period, I'll be sitting in the chair directly in front of the podium here, and I will be keeping time. That's not to inhibit you, but only to make sure that things flow smoothly and that nobody takes too much time. So I will have some cards, and I will be keeping time, and they have the number of minutes that you have left. We're asking you to limit yourself to 5 minutes, and I will flip them over as your time passes, and finally, if, you know, when your 5 minutes is up, you'll see the stop. And if the spirit
we have a day night in the crowd?
If the spirit keeps moving you, why, then we'll have to take other measures.
What's the pay, Richard?
It's all volunteer. One other announcement, there are some of you here who are going to be meeting tomorrow at 12:30 in regards to websites and coordinating some things, and that meeting will take place here in this room at 12:30 as soon as we dismiss. I'd like to turn the time over now to Chad Spute, who is our foundation president and has been a wonderful president, and he's a very multi-talented man and really is very dedicated to educating the world about some of the facets of Mormonism that a lot of people don't know. Chad?
Okay, Father Time. You don't get me. Isn't that a good name for him? We'll call him Father Time. Okay, first, before we get going, I do have to pause because Sue really runs the organization. I'm just a guy that goes around and shakes your hand. We all love Sue, and we've got her a little chocolate. So will you come up here and get this because you need chocolate? We would get you flowers and diamonds and all that. Sue works the hardest of everybody. She's very dedicated. She takes this to heart, as we all do on the board. And I do want to recognize those folks who are here tonight on the board. Where are you at? Where's Nathan? He's hiding. We've got Nathan. We've got Kath. Where are you, Kath? There, she's over here hiding. Let's see. Who else is here? I didn't see everybody else. Got Diane back there. Tom, where are you? The handsome Tom. He's back there. Jerem Smith is not with us tonight, but we basically just coordinate. We're all over the place, and we coordinate via email together and just try to keep the foundation rolling and so forth. But we would love for anybody that is interested to come and join with us and help us make decisions, help us plan whatever it is that you want to do to become a part of the foundation or be perhaps more of an active role. Contact us because we'll take you. We're always looking for fresh blood, just like the Mormon Church. So whatever we can do. So, all right. Well, I do want to welcome you on behalf of the foundation. This is the biggest conference, as Sue said, that we have, which is really great. We've had quite a lot of registrations that happened tonight, and we'll have probably another 20 or 30 more that will walk in tomorrow. And just to let you know that the foundation, again, has been very popular in the press, which has had also in correspondence with some other things that have been in the press related to Mormonism. And I was just interviewed tonight. That will be on the local news tonight. And we were in the papers, both the Deseret News, even the Deseret News. We didn't even have to bribe them this time. They did it for free, so, which is amazing for a Mormon publication. And anyway, am I too hard on the Mormons? I'm so sorry. Okay. Well, the theme of the conference this year comes from a lovely quote by Henry Davis Thoreau, and I'll read it to you. It says, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what I had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived." With that theme in mind, I want to honestly, from the bottom of my heart, congratulate you that you have chosen to live authentically, that you have cast off it's very powerful to me as I sat here in these chairs in October of 2006, just out of the church just a few months, and sitting where you are now and just feeling this overwhelming pride in my heart that I was with so many wonderful, courageous, strong people that have been able to do what we have done, especially those of us that were born and raised in this nonsense. So it took a lot to get out, and I salute that courage. And that's kind of the theme of my remarks tonight. I will try not to bore you. I hope these will be interesting for you. in this, the main thing that I want to express to you is courage. I think oftentimes when people leave the church, we feel that we are marginalized. We feel bad that we cause others pain. We feel that we are in a difficult place with family and friends, and we often feel very badly about ourselves. I don't want you to feel badly about yourselves. I know my words are just one more voice in the ex-Mormon movement, but you need to be very proud of who you are. You need to take courage in your heart for what you have done. Never let them make you feel marginalized or less because you chose to live authentically, because you chose to embrace truth. They are the ones that choose to remain in ignorance and remain ignorant about what's going on, all the things that they're being lied to about. You have the courage to study, to look at yourself and examine yourself and say, I was wrong, and then make the changes. Please clap for yourselves again. You deserve it. And please know, this is not a general authority message. I really mean what I'm saying. All right. There have been many people who have come before us. And I want you, if you can, to go back through those study skills that you had to acquire in getting your way out of Mormonism. But look to those examples that came before. You have William Law, who was in the first presidency with Joseph Smith, who discovered the fraud, who was a very courageous man, who put everything on the line, established the new, not the New Expositor, that's our publication, but the Expositor, and in an attempt to show his brothers and sisters in Mormonism what was going on. And he took a great risk, lost everything, all of his property. A great deal of money, was very wealthy in the town, lost a lot. Then there's also Sarah Pratt, who spurned Joseph Smith and his advances to become a polygamous wife of his, and he told him, I believe she said, I would rather be a harlot in hell than your wife, something to that effect. So she was quite courageous. So take heart from those people. And then, of course, we have Father Time, our very own Richard Packham, who led the way of our little band of ex-Mormons and organized the Ex-Mormon Foundation, who left, believe it or not, as we learned last night, before Sandra Tanner did. So he's been around a long time in the ex-Mormon movement, but his example is one that is still inspiring people today, and I'm very glad Richard's on our side, because I couldn't counter his arguments when I read his information, and I knew I was lost, so that was it. I had to surrender. Another group of individuals that I adore, Sandra and Gerald Tanner. Those of you that live locally, I'd encourage you to go down to their bookshop and meet with Sandra. She is one of the sweetest people on this earth. She's not this demon that we were always taught they were. She has a very courageous heart. She has stood up for the truth right here in the belly of the beast and has been doing that for 40 plus years. So again, a very courageous person. Jeff Ricks, is he here tonight? He's coming tomorrow. Okay, well, he'll get his kudos tomorrow then. But tonight, Jeff Ricks, those of you that are familiar with Post-Mormon, they are affiliated with us as well. We are very interested in the foundation and promoting them. Jeff was a former president of the Ex-Mormon Foundation, and he went out and started Post-Mormon, which is a marvelous board. Those of you that frequent Post-Mormon, raise your hand. Isn't it great? Don't we all love it? It's lovely. Okay. Those of you that are interested, that are out of state and are interested in forming a group, go to Post-Mormon, sign up with them, and start a chapter and start reaching out. Be courageous in your own neighborhood there. Last night as well, we got to meet with Grant Palmer. I love that man. Here's a man that discovered the truth, went out, printed a book, was disfellowshipped, not because he did anything wrong. He printed the truth, and that's what he kept saying to the people that were condemning him. He said, why are you... calling me to repentance when I've done nothing wrong. I'm only giving you the truth. And so he was disfellowshipped, but a good man. And then we have in our midst tonight, Andrew, you going to stand up? I know he will tonight. But we've got Flatlander here tonight. Here's another courageous guy in our midst who decided that what Mormonism was doing to the homosexual community was unjust, and he put his put his action to work on the internet and established the signing for something. So, and today was a great success, we understand. He's going to report on that for us tonight from his activities down at the administration building. Okay. All right. Just to end my remarks here, there's an individual who posts on Recovery from Mormonism. His name is Stephen Sims. He goes by Salt Lake Drone. And he is a former mission president. And it was during his missionary experiences as a mission president that he discovered that Mormonism was not true. Came home and met with all the bigwigs downtown. Tried to get the get the right information. Of course, they couldn't come up with anything that would change his mind. And he ended up leaving Mormonism. One thing that he posted on RFM is called Courage, My Friends. And I wanted to read that tonight to hopefully strengthen your hearts as you go through what we're going through. It says, I have read that many of you fear the fight. I have seen that some of you would rather not see the battle. You have found your freedom. You find yourselves comfortable in your escape. You write about yourselves and your reasons for being here. You're not sure you need to make a difference in the lives of others still under tyranny and oppression. At least not in any way that brings you discomfort or challenge. I don't call upon you to sacrifice your lives or even your lifestyle. You will not face inquisitors with any real power, only the power you relegate to them. It takes courage to make a difference in the world. 500 years ago, there lived a man with courage. In an age and time that personal religious beliefs were not allowed, in an age when dissenters were subjected to the cross or the stake to meet horrific death, this man began to doubt. He was not alone by any means, but those around him would never utter such disbelief. They had not the courage to condemn the Pope for fear of a mighty army directed from Rome. With courage in his heart and trepidation in his soul, he wrote his reasons for his moral break with the world as it surrounded him. Martin Luther walked the lonely distance to the cathedral door, and there he changed the world and gave birth to protest against tyranny. He didn't have all the answers, and said so. But he knew the Pope could only take his life, not his heart. He knew his actions would lead to bloodshed, strife, and suffering. But he held to truth and courage because he knew that the hardships he would bring down upon himself might serve to free enslaved minds and souls. He made a difference in the world. 225 years ago, in an age of discovery and exploration, a group of courageous men banded together to fight another type of tyranny. They too knew their actions would bring bloodshed, strife, and suffering. But like Luther before them, they weighed the consequences and knew that generations to come would be free in the pursuit of their dreams and happiness. The Declaration of Independence was not hidden or hard to find. It was not subtle nor cowardly. It stood as a testament to bravery against a mighty oppressor who might surely squelch their voice with its might. But they stood and fought to forge a new and great nation founded on principles of freedom from tyranny. Thomas Paine, one of the framers of this new and courageous nation, would later write, "Of all the tyrannies that afflict mankind, it is the tyranny of religion that I fear the most, for it seeks to follow a man from this world and into his eternity." Many of these men gave their lives for their beliefs to free their countrymen from the control of heavy-handed oppressors. Not everyone was up for the battle, and many loyalists fought the opposition even from within. Their voices faded in a destiny of greatness. Today, there are few in this great nation of the United States that long for the days of a monarchy to rule them. These courageous American patriots made a difference in the world. 40 years ago in the United States, that freedom had not been realized for a large portion of society. All men were created equal if they had a white skin. But the black man still hung his head as he moved to the back of the bus, literally and figuratively. Not a lone man. But a lone man stood at the forefront and dared. He dared to say it was right. Dr. King stood at the fateful podium and with courage in his heart declared, "I have a dream." Heresy to many, but freedom to others. He fought and died in the pursuit of freedom for all men and women. He made a difference in the world. 180 years ago, a new tyranny began to stir, conjured in the mind of a madman empowered by the force of oppression and control. Mormonism raised its ugly head and began its reign of lies and deceit as it fights for the hearts and free-thinking minds of men, women, and children. In a more educated era, at this new millennium, it has had to don a new facade.
It has had to put on its slick sophistry. It has developed well its friendly, smiling face. But for all the apparent wonderful intent, it robs the mind, the soul of truth. It destroys families, disunited in belief of its fables. It takes the lives of those who fear they won't measure up to the impossible requisites. It is not benign, but a terror and a misery, a wreaker of havoc. It seeks control of the heart, the body, the mind, and the resources of each one it touches as it infiltrates the unsuspecting and unaware. It took me 40 years on my own to break from that paradigm. How often I have wished for a mentor, a savior from the oppression earlier in my life. Many of you have the same experience. What is my duty now? What is my passion? Can I in good conscience sit idly by as hundreds of thousands of unsuspecting victims, unaware that they are even victims, are consumed each year by the monster? Their individuality fading, their heart surrendering, their mind stifled to a slow swirling haze. The men of Normandy gave their lives to stop a madman. They leaped courageously into the beach and sacrificed their very bodies to halt an oppressive philosophy. What will I do? Will I shrink into my comfortable leather armchair and mull over my pity? No, I cannot in good conscience wallow in my freedom. But I know it will take courage to make a difference. Now arises a new voice, a voice small and almost unheard, dissension from this terror. A voice that meekly cries out, no. That voice is hardly heard. It must be amplified if it will to make a difference in the world. The owners of that voice, a tiny band who have found freedom, who have a chance to have a chance to be heard. They are not called to offer their lives or to sacrifice freedom. They only must speak up for the truth, for freedom, for thought. They must make their voice loud enough to be heard. The battle rages for the freedom of souls from this tyranny. A meek cry and a hidden agenda will make little difference. It takes courage to make a difference in the world. It takes courage. You've all expressed that. You've all realized that. And my call to you, I have no authority, I have nothing. I'm just another one of these lone voices. But I would encourage you to make your voice heard. Don't sit back. There are people out there suffering. I've had many of them in my home. I've talked to many of them on the phone and through email. They're suffering. They're hurting. They need your love. They need your strong shoulders. They need that support that you can give them. That warm embrace to tell them that it's okay, that they're going to make it. So please do what you can, whatever that means. If it's on the internet boards, if it's writing something to the press, if it's doing anything, if it's organizing a group, a support group, it's doing something. Utilize this newfound freedom that you've got for the betterment of others. And I promise you that it will better your life. It's better mine reaching out and loving other people who have done the same for me. I'm sorry I'm such a boob. What a terrible example for a president. Aren't you supposed to be strong? Thank you. Thank you. In closing, I do want to express my love, and it is absolute genuine love. I love you. Many of you I know. Many of you I've got to know, and you've enriched my life, and many of you I don't know, and I hope to get to know, but I'm here for you. You need to call me. You're having a tough day. I'm here for you. Get me. I'll be there for you, because I know you'll be there for me. Thank you for coming. I hope you have a splendid weekend. Live it up. Get drunk tonight. Be wild. And have a great time. Thanks again.
Thank you, Chad. We all need to take to heart the challenge that he's given us. And as I was sitting there listening, I was thinking about all the times that I have elected not to speak out, which probably aren't a whole bunch, but mostly it's my family. You know, there have been times when I could have said things and didn't to keep the peace. And I think we all need to examine really closely just, you know, how careful we either need to be or don't need to be. And just a few spoken words at a very special time or certain time can make the difference in somebody else's life. I deliberately didn't put on the table over here for the raffle items something that will be raffled tomorrow because I wanted to introduce our special guest tonight. I don't know if he's even in here. Chad, are you here? Okay, where? Some of you may be aware of a delightful thing that was published a year ago, what was called the Mormon Missionary Calendar. Chad Hardy has had quite an interesting journey since that moment. Some of us know what's been happening recently and some of you don't. I received an email from Chad a few weeks ago, just out of the blue, we had never met, and asking if the foundation would like to have some of his calendars for our raffle. And I said, yes, but you have to sign them. So I will be adding to the table some of the 2009 new calendars that are just going to be coming out soon. Or have they been promoted yet and published? Yeah, yeah. And a few of the 2008 ones that we'll put in as door prizes tomorrow. And I told Chad that as we open up our open mic time, which Richard discussed with you, I was going to give him some extra time to share some of his experiences and let you know what's been going on lately.
Hello, my name's Chad, and I'm the very model of a Mormon excommunicate. And I do have a little secret to share. I'm very well endowed. And that will be exposed probably in the 2010 calendar. But anyway, I won't take too much time because I know that everybody wants to bear their testimony tonight. But the question I get all the time is, why in the world did I do this? And that's a question that I just can't answer in one answer, because it was pretty much a whole life of experiences that made me want to produce the calendar. And being excommunicated really didn't shock me, because I think I came out of the womb excommunicated. I'm not surprised that this happened. But just a little bit of history of why I wanted to produce the calendar. Grew up in a sixth generation Mormon family. Anybody else can beat me? Okay. Or be there with me? All right. So you understand? All right. I never really knew any non-Mormons that were in my family. And the one that had left the church, we never really were allowed to really talk to. And when we did, we had a whisper around her. So that was pretty much my family life in the church. But I grew up in a very liberal community of Palm Springs, California, and the church is not very big there. At least it wasn't when I lived there. And growing up, I had to deal with the question about what it is to be a Mormon, and I was persecuted for being a Mormon, especially by a lot of the born again Christians and other really radical Christian groups. I went to a Christian jubilation when I was in high school, and they found out that I was a Mormon kid. They just surrounded me and started screaming at me, and it reminded me of the scriptures, or not the scriptures, but they would talk about in church about the gnashing of teeth, you know. And that's where my testimony was kind of born. Like, well, if I'm being persecuted, then of course my religion is true. And I wanted to be around, I never really had any Mormon friends, so I wanted to be around Mormons. So I applied to Ricks College, went there for a couple of years, went on a two-year mission back to California. I think they wanted to keep me close. They knew I had something up my sleeve. And then I went to Brigham Young University. While I was you know, involved in the church through my college years, I started to see that the ugliness that I saw on the outside was even uglier on the inside. And I went through 3-4 years at BYU, left the college with zero friends. And the people that I always was taught were bad because they smoked and drank and, you know, did all these things that were so naughty were actually the people that showed the most love and compassion and acceptance to me. And so all these things were kind of stirring in my mind as I left BYU in 2002. You know, at that point, I was very much active in the church, had a calling, paid my tithing, and was miserable. And about a year later, I was employed at that time for Larry H. Miller, working for Jordan Commons. And I left the company to start my own event company, and I started producing street fairs. Well, I decided I wanted to move to St. George because I really love the desert, because that's where I grew up, in the desert. And I had been working with the city to start a weekly street fair. I don't know if any of you have been down to St. George and seen the Thursday night street fair. It's not really that great. It's because I'm not in charge of it anymore. But I started it with my own money, put everything into it. I moved down there, created this community event. It was awesome. We had a good time. I made friends really fast. In fact, I made more friends in St. George than I've ever made anywhere else. There's some really great people there. There's also some really interesting people there. As I did this event, all of the downtown owners of the stores, they're all members of the church. Well, they started pretty much slamming their doors in my face one at a time. And next thing I know, they are banning up against me, going on a witch hunt, finding things on my MySpace page that might be off color, taking them to the city council. Make a long story short, I got my business ripped out from underneath me and given to them, the good Mormons of the community. And then I did a little bit of genealogy on them, and come to find out most of them are related, directly blood related, to those involved in the Mountain Meadow Massacre. Kind of interesting. And it started to make me think, you know, I realized I had to forgive these people because they're only reacting to what they've been taught. They don't know any other, they don't know any different. And they are continuing a pattern, a grid that's been taught and taught and taught and taught. And I decided that I was going to make a difference, and I wanted to disrupt the status quo. I had no money left. I was down to my last dollar, and I did my affirmation walk up Snow Canyon, and I came home, and there was a message on my phone from Kennecott Land, and they asked me to come back and do an event for them all summer long, doing all their events for the new Daybreak community, because I did their grand opening a few years ago. And that was the answer I was looking for, because I had lost my business, I had lost my pride, I had lost everything. I had to refinance my house just so I could live, and this was enough money to get me back on my feet. So I came back to Salt Lake. I worked all summer. I had enough money to move to Las Vegas. In the meantime, that summer, my sister and I made the news when we decided to sink a jet ski in the middle of Utah Lake and had to swim 6 miles in the middle of the night. And while I was out there, I thought, you know, everything kind of came to me, because at this point, everything was out of head with what happened in, you know, all of my, through my whole life in the church. My experiences at BYU and my experiences with my church leaders, my experience in St. George. And that's when I decided, if I get out of here alive, I'm going to start over and move to Las Vegas. And so I moved there with a credit card and a prayer. I started a new company doing team building. And that's what I do now. I own a company. We do, corporate team building, for people that come to Las Vegas. And it's done really well. Well, I still was pretty bitter about all this money that I've lost. And I thought, how in the world can I ever get that back? And how in the world can I ever make a statement about what's happened to me in my life, in the church and outside of the church? And then one day, the Spirit spoke to me. And I came up with the perfect checkmate. Men on a mission. Mormons exposed. In more ways than one. As soon as the idea came to me, I went on the internet, and would you believe it that MormonsExposed.com was available? Oh, I bought that. I couldn't get my credit card out fast enough, and I paid for that. The next day, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. The next day, I'm talking to my friend who owns a prop shop in Las Vegas, and she thought the whole thing was hysterical because she used to date a lot of Mormons because she grew up in Nevada. And in walks her husband, and he was quite fascinated by this whole concept, and he's like, dude, that is awesome. And I just candidly said, do you want to invest? And if you ever want to know the success, you need to ask a Jewish person for money. Because he laid down his money and he made Men on a Mission happen financially. And next thing we know, we had a publicist within 36 hours. Pretty much in 72 hours from conceptualizing this, we had already had a whole business plan in place. And this was April 1st of 2007. 5 months later, we were on every single news channel, Rolling Stones, you name it, we were there. I mean, it happened that fast. Calendar Club came after us. Everyone just came running after us. And I told Fred, who's my business partner, the only way that I'm going to go into this is that we have to be really careful how we position ourselves, because this can't be a slam to the Mormon church or it won't work. It has to be very much showcasing the Mormons as no one has ever seen them before. And what a better way than showcasing the most self-righteous part of the Mormon church, which is missionary work. Because when I was a missionary, I felt like I was never quite righteous enough. And everybody had to out-righteous each other. Well, I was probably the only missionary that's ever told my mission president to F off and live to tell about it. I never could deal with, I had a problem. I have a problem with authority, okay? Let's just get that over with. All right. So, anyway, I did send a complimentary copy to all of the city officials in St. George and all the downtown merchants, and I thank them for the inspiration for the project. But it was really interesting because at that point, I had an international audience. I had a mouthpiece that I didn't have before, and I thought, okay, I could do some major damage right now if I wanted to, but I had to remember the boys that were in the calendar because many of them are still very much in the faith, and I wanted this to be about them. What I wanted to do is showcase to the world that not all Mormons are ignorant bastards. Because I was embarrassed to call myself a Mormon when I left Utah. When I went to Nevada, I didn't tell anybody that I was a Mormon. And what was really interesting is in producing this calendar, for the first time, I was proud to be a Mormon. And I was proud to be a different Mormon that doesn't live by the status quo. And I was actually feeling pretty good about myself because the church hadn't contacted me. Everything was cool. The only quotes that we got from church leaders was, hey, you know, this is their thing. They're just flexing some muscles. It's no big deal. And so we went ahead and produced the next, the follow-up calendar, 2009. And we had over 100 guys submit for this calendar. And what's interesting, though, is even with that many people, I can't tell you how many people would have to step into fear and were afraid to pose. But we did. We ended up doing the next calendar. In the midst of all of this, the presidency changed in the church, and that's when Thomas Monson took over. And about 2 weeks afterwards is when we all started getting contacted, all of the models and myself. And it was really interesting because the stake president contacted me at my work email, but I don't know how he got that. Then he started calling my work phone number. Again, I don't know how he got that. And I kept putting them off because I had Entertainment Tonight coming and I had the BBC coming for our next photo shoot, and I didn't want them to cause any problems. So I kept putting them off, not talking to them. And finally I said, okay, I'll meet with you on April 15th. They came over to my house, and they came over with boxing gloves on. I mean, not literally, but they were on the defense. They thought that I had a bone to pick with the church. And I made sure that I wasn't alone. I made sure they were in my home. I had a non-member with me, Heather. And, of course, she had a lot of great questions for them. It was really interesting to listen to her talk, because she does not believe in organized religion at all. But we had a really interesting talk, about 2 hours, and to make a long story short, it seems like we just kind of agreed to disagree. And I thought, okay, nothing's happened to the models. I'm cool. I'm off the hook. Everything's good. We're going to continue on with our calendar. About a month later, I got an email asking me if I had reconsidered my stand on the calendar and if I was planning on discontinuing it. And I explained to him that I have a financial partner that is financially invested in this. I mean, he wants to get his money out of this thing. For me, money was never the issue. If this thing made money, I had some really cool plans. I wanted to create a healing center. You know, I still want to do that. It's on my plans. I mean, that's why I'm in the team building business. I'm about bettering people's lives and building relationships with people. So that's something that I want to do. But I was never like, ooh, I'm going to make a quick buck on the church. For me, it was all about the mission and all about the message that we were doing. My Jewish partner, however, of course, he's all about money. And I told him, I said, hey, look, I can't. I mean, this guy's $100,000 in. I can't. He wants his money out of there. And I used the whole, talked about the Marriotts and how, you know, they have people invested in their company. And that's probably why they can't sell porn. I'm really disappointed because I'm still staying at Marriott and I didn't see any porn channels here. Because that's why I booked there, actually. I'm rambling now. I pretty much told them, we're continuing with the project. We've had a great experience. The media loves this. We get so much fan mail from people saying, if there were more Mormons like you guys, I would have never left the church. And that was pretty much, we have thousands of people on our fan club list, thousands. And, to me, and especially the young people in the church, they liked it because not everybody can relate to the image that they have manufactured and created and the family values image that they have created and manufactured. I never could fit into that. And I bet you a lot of people in this room, we all don't feel like we fit into that manufactured, image. And, the email banter went back and forth, and then all of a sudden it turned personal. They now wanted to know about my personal life. He says, we need to talk, Brother Hardy. There's some very private things that we need to talk that I can't discuss over the phone or an email. I said, oh, really? He said, well, I'm sorry, but I have nothing to really share with you about my personal life. And he kept being persistent, and finally he told me over the phone. He said, so Brother Hardy, I need to ask you something. This is very private. Are you living with Heather? Now, Heather works for me. And I'm like, no, she works for me, but she doesn't live with me. He says, oh, well, that's not what I've heard. Really? Well, where did you get that information? Oh, well, I can't tell you, Brother Hardy. I said, well, then I guess I can't really tell you anything else either. And then he says, well, have you had any sexual relations with anyone of the opposite sex? Okay. And then he asked me, started asking me, about my underwear. Do I wear the garments? And all these questions. And I pretty much came unglued because at this point, I mean, all these accusations that he was making were just completely false. And this is about the third time this has happened to me in my life by church leadership where they've called me in and, oh, I've heard this about you. And I just told them, I said, you know what? I don't really need to talk to you anymore. I don't need to tell you anything about my personal life. It's none of your business. And he followed up with a letter for a summons for a council for my membership. Of course, I was outraged because I didn't know how this was going to affect my little calendar business. And of course, I call my partner, Fred, and he's like, no way. I can't believe they fell for it. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, I've been waiting for this. He's like, I know it's your life and I know it's your family, but oh my gosh, we're going to sell so many calendars. Thanks, Fred. So anyway, I called President Davey and I said, you know, I'm not just a nobody. I've been in Rolling Stone magazine. People know about this calendar. If you excommunicate me, this is going to be big news. I don't think this is a good idea, President Davey. Well, Brother Hardy, if that's what you need to do, the only person that's gonna, the only way that they're going to know that you're excommunicated is if you tell them. And I'm like, well, you know, I really don't agree with your with this, and I'm going to have to go to the media about this because I would be doing myself and the project a disservice if I didn't, because this project is all about opening dialogue and communication, and people need to know what's going on. And I said, I've got the media contacting me every month asking for updates. And up to this point, it's the church has said nothing, which is why I pretty much banked on that for this entire project. They're never, no way would they be that stupid. All they're going to do is promote my calendar. I'm thinking there's no way they're going to do this. Well, they did. And they gave me pretty much 5 days notice to have witnesses there and people to speak on my behalf. I couldn't get my family there, and I said, you know, this really isn't this isn't going to work for me, Ken. You know, they would not change the date. At that point, contacted the Associated Press, and I said, you may want to see this. And I contacted TMZ, because gosh, they're so cool. And I said, you may want to see this. And next thing we know, it became a media circus. And when I went in for prior to the summit or the council, I said, well, why are you calling me in? Because all it says is conduct unbecoming. That could mean anything. And I need to know if I need to prepare documents, because you see on this letter it says be prepared, you know, pretty much to defend myself. What am I defending myself against? And and he says, well, there are three things. Number one is your failure to honor your priesthood obligations of wearing your garments. And you know, doing your priesthood responsibilities. Number two, your failure to pay tithing. And number three, your involvement in the very inappropriate project. I'm like, oh, you mean the calendar? He says, yes. And I said, so let me get this right. I'm being called in for not wearing my garments, not paying my tithing, and producing a calendar. Is that correct? He says, yes. Okay. All right. So that's what went out to the media. That those are the three reasons for my excommunication. Well, I went to the thing. When I walked into the church, they had four bodyguards standing outside. Inside Edition was parked outside. And walked in, and they whisked me right away. I brought in like the whole trailer park of people to come and support me. It was awesome. The most motley crew was there. So they were all hanging. It was really, that was a cool, I wish someone took a picture. That was cool. Anyway, I went in there and I had my counsel, those who have gone through one of these before. Okay. Church court. Very respectful. I actually was expecting it to be really mean, and they were actually kind of nice. So I just felt bad for them because I knew that they were doing just what they were been taught to do, and they were justified in what they were doing to me. Except one guy, he was bawling the whole time. I think he knew. Do I need to go? Okay, I'm gonna wrap this up. 2 minutes? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So anyway, the whole entire council the whole thing was about the calendar. Nothing was brought up about anything else. Nothing. Nothing, not even my garments. So they excommunicated me. That's the story. But now the church is rebuking the Associated Press, saying that I've been excommunicated for other things. And that's a whole nother story. And the other day I got an accidental fax from the church legal department. Again, the Lord works in mysterious ways, which has the email dialogue between their lawyers and the church attorneys. And in there, it flat out says that the stake president said that I was excommunicated for things other than the calendar. So guess what, brothers and sisters? If you're not wearing your garments or paying your tithing, you're going to be excommunicated. So anyway, that's interesting. And then to wrap this up, now we're dealing with the BYU drama. Now, I was finished in 2002, except, oops, I forgot to take 4 religion credits. Dang it. Well, I never really had the money to take them or the time because I had my own business and it was up and down financially. I finally, after doing the calendar, it's really weird, you know, because Fred and I were blessed. Both of our companies just exploded after doing the calendar, our personal companies. So I finally had the money to do it. So I'm like, all right, now's the time to get this done before they don't let me do it. Applied for graduation, took my courses online. Everything was cool. I walked with my class. I took my picture with the guy. And next thing I know, I don't have a diploma. I called BYU to say, where's my diploma? And they transferred me from one department to the next. Nobody could figure it out. And finally, somebody said, oh, your graduation's never been posted. You need to talk to your advisor. So I talked to my advisor, and she pretty much said, well, this is what I've been told to tell you. You have a non-academic hold on your records and your degree. Even though I called every department, they said there was no hold. They said, you need to call Norm Finlayson with the Academic Advisement Center. Called him. He says, oh, I'm so sorry. I meant to send you a letter. Oops. A week and a half later, so I get this letter saying I've been deleted from graduation, that I will not be awarded a degree from Brigham Young University. So that's the newest battle now that I had to deal with. It's kind of weird because I got here and I was taking a shower and I had the TV on and they're talking about it on TV. Are people talking about it here? That's just weird. So anyway, I had, let's see, NBC Today Show contacted me. So they're interested in having me on. So this is going to be big news and a big another pow for the church. So that's pretty much, I'm sorry for taking so much time. It, like I said, why did I do it? Well, it took 20 minutes for me to explain. There's so much to it. I really wanted this to be something to bridge the gaps between us and them. There is too much in our world, us against them. I don't believe in that. I believe in one gospel, and that is love. And I hope that my silly little calendar, that statement of that will already has reached across the world. And I'm hoping that this can bridge a gap between the Mormons and the non-Mormons and the atheists and the Muslims and everything to say, we're all human. Just take off your shirt. I'll prove it to you. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Go BYU. One of the worst things I have in my Treasures of Truth book is my BYU diploma. I wish it was from another school. We are going to be filming the conference this weekend, and eventually, hopefully within a week or two, it will be up on YouTube, as well as linked in our website. But we're not going to film the mic time tonight. It will be recorded, and it is being live streamed, right?
Right. That's the note I wanted to give, is that okay. If you aren't interested in about 420 people hearing what you have to say, when you get up to the front, just give me a little cut sign across your neck, and I will pull the thing here. And yes, absolutely.
Appropriate.
And so my laptop will be anointed with your desire not to go.
There's 420 people listening right
420
now.
420 have tuned in. We've only got 68 connected right now.
I know last year one time we had, what, like 750
tuned
in?
For the keynote Saturday night, as usual,
okay.
Peak time, yeah.
So this is great. Matt just does a wonderful job. He sits there all weekend. And my daughter, Kathleen, who I don't know where she went, she helps him. So, oh, there she is. It's a big, big job, and I get so many emails from people thanking us for having it. We used to just have it on the website and not live stream it, and we just hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people eventually get to hear it. So we're going to start our mic time now. And for those who haven't been here before, it's just a time to come up to introduce yourself if you want to and tell a little bit about your background. And we do need to keep it short because we really usually have a lot of people who want to do it. And it's a little bit open-ended, but it's 20 to 9 right now, so probably till 10, about 10. So we will turn the time over, and if you want to come up, and I'm going to vacate this front seat here, and if you want to come up and sit in the order that you come up, and Mick, you're going to turn the camera off, right? So you won't be filmed. All right, the time is now yours.